Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Well, we've had former top Bush administration officials, experts on Iran come out and say this whole plot is phony and manufactured. We've had Bob Baer, the former CIA black op commander, come out and say they're totally fake. Ray McGovern, former top CIA analyst to Reagan and, of course, Bush Sr., come out and say it's totally phony. There are literally now hundreds, I can't even keep track, of top experts coming out and saying this is totally fake and phony. We now have the affidavits they used to arrest this used car salesman, drunk pothead. He was just trying to do a drug deal with the very Las Zetas that the Justice Department allows to ship drugs in and ships guns into Mexico. So a cover for Fast and Furious, a pretext to launch war against Iran, and the consensus of experts is Israel has green-lighted an attack and is trying to get the U.S. to do it. Congressman King labels Iran terror plot act of war, says Obama should have troops on standby for a strike, not even having Israel strike. Joining us for the next 30 minutes is Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer. His bio is too long, but he ran operations trying to kill bin Laden and was blocked. He's best-selling author of Operation Darkheart, and he dropped a bombshell 2 days ago. And we wrote an article about it at Infowars.com on Andrew Napolitano's Fox Business show. We're going to break in a moment. We'll get kicked off here now, saying that he has an FBI Justice Department source that told him this whole plot was not in the computer system. So this isn't just experts saying it looks phony, it's fake, it's a pretext for war, a political smokescreen. He says he talked to a Justice Department official who has the clearance and said it isn't in the system and it should be. So joining us is Anthony Schaefer. Colonel, good to have you with us.
Oh, thank you for having me back. Good to be on again.
Sir, we're going to break here in just a few minutes, but let's go right to the heart of the matter after the break. Right now, what are your sources saying? Is the attack on Iran right now green light?
Well, you know, I got to be honest with you. I just met with them again, and I went through everything one more time just to make sure everybody's clear. And I'm getting the same thing. There's just no information within their systems indicating the background on this, which is a huge red flag for a lot of guys on the inside. Secondly, I got to tell you, even if there's a desire, Alex, there's really very little military capability. One of the things that was revealed to me is that, yeah, there's been a call that's gone out for capability to do something, but, you know, for better or for worse, everything is really tied up in Afghanistan right now. So, you know, there may be some elements here who are desiring the outcome when we move forward, but I got to be honest with you, the former issue of what you said in your introduction, the issue regarding Southwest border and the Zetas, I really think is driving the train at this point, because I don't think there's any way we could credibly put together a military capability to do anything.
Okay, some stations don't carry this first 5 minutes, so I want to come back, Colonel, and recap all of this, but did I hear you correctly? You talked to your Justice Department source, and they said, yeah, it's not in the system. And basically, if this thing did exist and wasn't a fabrication, it would be in the system. Or somebody doesn't want the investigation looked at and has expunged it?
Either one of those are the options we're looking at. Absolutely. The idea is this. You know, people who have the need to know don't have any information that they could look at. And that's incredible, especially at this point in time after this has been out in the news several days. There's normally a great deal of information showing how the investigation came to the conclusions it did. And they're telling me, and I talked to another expert this morning regarding the actual indictment and the details of that, the actual indictment will not hold up in a court of law, according to my expert. So basically, there's a twofer here, Alex. First, there's no credible information inside the system where people should be able to find it if they have a need to know and right to know the information. And secondly, the experts have looked at the actual indictment are telling me this is not going to hold water when it comes to trial. So that, therefore, you know, and please don't get me wrong, I do believe the Iranians are a threat. There's things that they have done and are doing which threaten the country. All I'm saying is right now, this one instance does not look to be legitimate from everybody I'm talking to.
All right, well, then the question is, I want to come back, Colonel, and we appreciate you joining us, to recap everything you've said and flesh it out in more detail, and then ask, why is this coming forward now, and what's the outcome going to be? Because they're talking about cooking up new plots. Stay with us.
T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
My friends, in the last 16-plus years I've been on air, few things I've covered have been as important as we're covering right now. And I got to be honest with you. As bad as things are, you don't know who's good and bad until you get to that crisis moment. And I am heartened by the fact that I have literally, without even trying, seen more than 50 analysts. And I know there's more than that. Top Clinton, Bush administrations, you name it, come out. Pentagon people, Colonel Schaefer, FBI people giving him information, Steve Pachinik, Ray McGovern, Bob Baer, coming out saying this Iran situation is totally, totally phony. And these are people who fought Iran. These are not people that are, you know, peaceniks or something. The point is, why has this been manufactured now? Now, Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer, best-selling author of the book they tried to redact, Operation Darkheart, the guy that had the top al-Qaeda people in his sights, was barred from killing them pre-9/11, the guy that was persecuted for blowing the whistle but came out stronger on the other side, for Abel Danger, you know, a real patriot, Colonel Schaefer, joins us for the next 20 minutes, and then we've got Gerald Celente joining us, and also Dr. Steve Pachinik, who worked in a lot of different black op capacities, including assassinations and overthrowing governments. He called me 10 times yesterday morning. He never, ring, till I got off the treadmill, went over and talked to him, and he said, look, they're trying to green light a war. You know, he has all the Pentagon sources, but I was just getting some good news from Colonel Schaefer, if you missed the last segment, saying there are people that want to launch this war, but the assets aren't there. So I want to walk through this carefully. But Colonel Schaefer, take your time, because obviously that became a big national news story when you were on Judge Napolitano's Fox Business and said your high-level Justice Department source with a high-level security clearance said it was not in the computers. That sends up red flags. Specifically, what do you mean by red flags? What does this signify? You said you met with the source again today, or did you say yesterday, to make sure you were right about this now that it's such a big story? And then your incredible Pentagon connections, you know, is this green lighted? Because I've had family officers who were just deployed. They won't tell us what it is. They say it's serious. I have other sources that said, well, yeah, you're right. We are being told, look to back up Israel in an Iran attack to get stuff out of the Strait of Hormuz. But I didn't tell you that. But I know you are high level in the think tanks and the Pentagon connections and, you know, lecture on actual strategy level. And so your security clearance has been as high as it gets. So you've got sources I don't have. So let's walk through here for people the magnitude of this, because a lot of my sources say this is the closest we've gotten to an actual attack on Iran. And you've got Congressman King saying this is an act of war. Obama's got to get the military going. Certainly, this is the biggest drum beating I've seen. And why would they use such a faulty piece of garbage to sell this? You've got the floor, Colonel. Break it down.
Well, thank you. Well, first off, you know, I think it is very clear that the thing that we must do, and this I've talked to a lot of folks who are of my mind, you know, the last thing we want to do, Alex, is make an enemy of the Iranian people. The Iranian people are Persians, and frankly, they are as fed up with the theocracy which rules them as we are. The thing is, though, we cannot afford to make them an adversary in the process of moving forward. That's why I think the military debate is so important at this point, because some people recognize you want to have all the different components available to you to do things at the same time. The last thing you want to do is actually do something which will enable the theocracy to actually clamp down even more on the people. And that's the issue right now that I'm being told is really kind of the thing that's pushing people back. Now, regarding the history, let me be very clear for your audience. They understand. Look, when I was in Afghanistan, and this is in my book, Darkheart, we found the Iranians were up to no good as early as 2003. There's two chapters devoted to an interrogation of a U.S. citizen who was of Iranian descent. His brother was working for the IRGC, and his brother was there in eastern Afghanistan on the opposite side of the country from Iran, paying people to stir up trouble against us. So let me be very clear here. I'm not pro-Iranian by any circumstance of the imagination. I have seen what these people, what the Iranian IRGC has been doing to try to kill our soldiers. So there's no way in heck that I would ever come out for the Iranians. With that said, I think we have to have to understand that we're playing a chess game, and simply, you know, pushing our military towards a kinetic solution is not the best solution here. And what concerns me is that this, as you mentioned in the introduction, this operation just smells, this assassination concept smells of a plot. And let me tell you something. This is an exclusive for you guys. I got to tell you, I was at my publisher yesterday in New York City, and I actually asked him, did you guys leak the outline of my next book? Because, frankly, a lot of the stuff that's in this current plot is actually in a plot line we're working on in my next book. So I got to be honest with you, Alex. I was flabbergasted when I saw this, materialize in the press, because much of this is not only like a Hollywood script. Frankly, you know, we were looking at doing something in fiction which mimics very closely what's going on in this so-called plot. So that's what made me just sit up and say, wow, there's something really wacky about this. And that
well, Colonel Schaefer, for those that don't know, a lot of times, different agencies, even different governments, will use plot lines to actually carry out real attacks or fake attacks. They will also, as has been admitted for 12 years that I know of, the Pentagon, the CIA actually pay script writers to write scripts for them, quote, to be able to imagine what terrorists might do. So the fact that you went to your publisher when you were in New York to be on MSNBC yesterday, because I know you were there, you couldn't come on here yesterday, and that you're saying maybe somebody leaked your script and that maybe the White House used it. Is that what you're getting at?
Well, it may be, because, I mean, there's so many parallels there to this thing. And, I mean, if frankly, what we're looking at here is a plot where 24 meets the Sopranos, which makes me, you know, obviously it's great for fiction, but I think the reality of which we're faced with is entirely different. I mean, and let me tell you, as an intelligence professional, this used car salesman would be the last individual in the world that I, as a professional intelligence officer, would direct to get in contact with a drug group to become a group of assassins. Let me tell you, on the face of that, you know, that is beyond any operational knowledge that any intelligence officer would do. You just don't trust someone with that lack of focus and training to do something that would be that key and critical to an assassination plot. It's just not done. So
wouldn't you normally go after well-performing former military people or doctors or engineers or people that have shown that they're focused and professional?
There's a term, and you've used it before, called vetting. One of the key elements of any successful intelligence operation, you can ask Bob Baer this. Bob would probably tell you the same thing. The key to a successful intelligence operation is vetting of an asset, to make sure that you test them adequately, to make sure that they will do your bidding when the time comes. And frankly, this guy was, as far as I could tell, I wouldn't have used him to do basically a dead drop for me, because I think he's not even that reliable. And the second thing that you need to look at, and I hope your audience looks at very hard, is the wire transfers. My goodness, you know, since the beginning of the current war, everybody's been looking at high-dollar transfers of money. So, again, an intelligence organization with the professional background of the IRGC or the Quds Force, you know, I think they watch us very closely. So for them to make an amateur mistake tells me one of two things. First, there was a radical element within the Quds Force who was just doing this on their own and really kind of wanted to discredit the other side. And let's not forget that within the Iranian government, there is a huge conflict going on between Ahmadinejad and the other folks who want to do different things. So there is truly a conflict there. So this could well be good news by the fact that there's a visible break within the government, and someone there did this trying to prove a point. But on the other hand, this could be, again, a provocation by someone here who basically wanted this to be caught. And again, I've talked to a number of intelligence professionals, many of which, Alex, are... and again, like you've already said, these guys and gals are not pro-Iranian, but they've told me, based on their experience, because I wanted to make sure I wasn't crazy, that based on their experience, this basic format does not add up to any known format for a successful intelligence operation. If you're really,
but it is, but it does fit the format that we've seen hundreds of times the last few years of the FBI setting up mentally ill patsies, yes, or just purely setting people up. And as you mentioned, the affidavit, it's in the news today with those that have seen the affidavit that it was the informant running the whole thing, and this was just some idiot trying to be part of a drug deal and make some money, and that it isn't even designed to hold up later. It's just a pretext to launch a war. Alicia Bastani has been a full-time trader for 6 years, focusing mostly on U.S. stock markets. He writes for the blog LeadingTrader.com, highly visited site, a website dedicated to dismantling no BS information about trading. He currently lives and works in London, England. And we appreciate him joining us today because he caused quite a fracas by saying that the emperor was wearing no clothes. Why do you think they freaked out so bad and tried to imply it was a hoax, but later had to admit that it wasn't a hoax?
Hi, Alex. First of all, let me say thank you very much for having me in your show. It's a great honor. And I'm a big fan of Austin, Texas myself. Love to visit. But as to why I think it happened, for one thing, I think it was because it was too good to be true, maybe, for someone as a trader to come on TV and say those things. Because usually, you know, these financial pundits who come on TV, they don't say anything substantive. They just say the same old crap all the time, you know. So someone actually said something which sounded true, seemed too good to be true for some of these guys, some of these, media folks. So maybe that was one reason. As for whether there was a conspiracy to discredit me, it's possible, but I don't know for sure.
Well, my point is I've seen other people on other prominent channels. Max Keiser, for one, coming up later, he had his own BBC show a few years ago and basically said similar things, because it's true, and there wasn't this big gasping and freaking out. I mean, I think a lot of it is because this stuff is so transparent now, it's so obvious that the emperor is wearing no clothes, that when you pointed it out in a clear and concise way, it freaked him out. I mean, I've talked to people that are invited to Federal Reserve meetings to be let in, you know, to the inside scoop if they're wealthy. And they say things are going to collapse. Here's how we profit. I know a lot of big stock traders. That is their big joke. So what you said was true. You said, hey, you can make a lot of money off this. And so you did let the cat out of the bag, or you let the general public know that they're on the menu for dinner. But let's now talk, unfettered, specifically from your years of trading, why you picked up this worldview and what some of the other traders around you say. I mean, let us into more of the secrets that seem to upset these people so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you mentioned secrets because I don't think they are secrets. You know, I know there's a lot of people, you know, in the general public who don't know about these things, about the fact that traders and even nowadays with technology, even ordinary people can make money when markets go down. But what I was talking about, I mean, you're right, Alex, because in a way, what I was talking about is what Goldman Sachs has been getting away with for years, which is basically dumping crap on people and then betting against the very same people, you know? Taking the opposite side of the action to what they themselves were selling. It happened in the dot-com crash the year 2000. It happened in the Great Depression in the 1930s. It happened in the housing bubble, in the housing crash. So what I was saying to people is, look, these guys, these bankers, these idiots who got us into this mess in the first place, these guys are already making money by betting against you, by betting against everybody, the stock market. So now it's your turn, you know? Don't be a chump. I'm not suggesting people should go out there and gamble with their money. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, what I was trying to get out there is, there are ways that you too, whether you're listening from home or anywhere, that you too can get on the same game that these guys have been doing for years. So I don't think it's a big secret, but some people obviously thought, well, this stuff is new.
Well, some have likened it to suicide bankers. Max Keiser, you know, tells that documented story in the 9/11 Commission of a guy who stayed at his desk, even though the building was on fire, to make trades betting against airlines, and he made $5 million, but he died. It's almost this target psychosis or narcosis, where they get so obsessed with the mission that they're wrecking society. It's not free market. It's government has allowed them to do this and allowed certain inside players And we saw the Timberwolf emails connected to the big banks saying, look at my dumb idiot customers. Man, they're morons. I'm going to sell them this SH blank T. Ha, ha, ha. You have earthquakes in Japan or earthquakes in the U.S. And invariably Goldman Sachs and other brokers put out the Twitter. Oh, my wallet fell. I mean, just a total disconnection from humanity. Give me your view on that, because you know, that's really what you were hitting upon, was the predatory nature.
See, the thing is, I'll be honest with you, Alex. Look, when I'm looking to short the markets, you know, in layman's terms, you know, bet against the markets or make money downwards, I don't really think of it. Maybe I should think of it from a human standpoint, but I don't. For me, it's just, you know, a job. You know, it's in the same way that the carpenter, you know, makes buildings, you know, houses, and in the same way that the plumber fixes pipes, fireman is his job. For me, betting against the markets and selling short when markets crash, it's just part of the game. You know, I don't really think of it in those kind of terms. Whether people are, you know, the fact is the companies are going bankrupt and people's jobs and pension is going down with it. I mean, I know it sounds terrible, but that's the truth.
Being honest about the current system. I mean, that's like with Bonnie and Clyde. They asked Clyde, why do you rob banks? He said, that's where the money's at. Or you've got the parable of the scorpion and the frog. And the scorpion says, will you take me across the river? And the frog says, you're going to sting me and kill me. He said, no, I promise I'll be friendly. Take me across and I'll be nice. So the frog says, nice frog, says, get on my back. And when they get over to the other side, the scorpion stings him, and the frog's in pain, dying. He says, why'd you kill me? He said, I'm a scorpion. And so I guess, in a way, we're the sheep here to be gang raped, and the vampires are here to feed. And then they even call it free market. So the grassroots calls for socialism, which only helps the bankers more because now they can consolidate power and suck it off offshore. And, I mean, it's kind of our bug-eyed, sheepish, mentally retarded lot to just sit here and be gang raped.
Right. I would say this, Alex. A lot of people do think that people who sell short, people who are betting against the markets, making money when the markets crash, that it's immoral. I personally do not believe that. I don't accept that view. Short sellers provide a good service to the markets. We can't do without them, basically because for two reasons. They provide liquidity in the markets. There's more activity, more liquidity, more
and
money.
And also brings balance from irrational exuberance. You must have missed what I was saying. I think you're a good guy. You're being honest. We could short big, evil, corrupt companies we don't like. I purely get it's just a tool, force of nature. I'm talking about Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, the insiders who are exempt from SEC rules, whose former officers sit in the Federal Reserve and SEC, who've gotten tens of trillions of banker bailout money to back up their derivative crap, because you were bringing up people selling garbage. I'm talking about listing garbage as AAA. That's criminal. And that's what I'm talking about. You know, you were getting off into, you know, on the show that I saw on BBC about Goldman Sachs, you know, making money in downtimes, and they rule the world, and they were freaking out about that. So, I mean, that was just them freaking out about the obvious. I was just going further to the point of the rest of the story, because you started to allude to how they're selling people toxic assets.
That's right, yeah. Well, that's absolutely true, and I would agree with you 100%, because Goldman Sachs has been behind, as I mentioned, almost every major crash in history. And a good example is the dot-com.
But now we're going to get into solutions with G. Edward Griffin, but I also want to get into problem, reaction, solution. So we're going to cover that first. G. Edward, Fast and Furious. Now we learn it's more like Iran-Contra. I covered it earlier on the Wednesday show, where it's admitted that the U.S. government allows drugs to be shipped in by select cartels, then actually ships them the guns, doesn't just allow them to leave gun shops, and then gives it to cartels to wipe out their enemy and then recycle the crisis and blame the Second Amendment for it. Now the Attorney General has been caught perjuring himself, But I noticed that Issa and others are saying, come in and change your testimony. We understand it was a mistake, because we've learned that Fast and Furious, under another name, is at least 5.5 years old and goes back to the Bush administration, allowing the Sinaloa cartel to bring in drugs in exchange for protection and guns to wipe out their enemies. And that is actually in Hawaiian papers, Texas papers, El Paso Times, but it's not getting national attention. I think this is one of the most red-handed examples of problem reaction solution I've ever seen. So your view on Fast and Furious and how important problem reaction solution has been in history.
Well, it's certainly been important, hasn't it, Alex, in our history in America, because for many years, actually long before the first Bush administration, there have been forces within the United States government who have wanted to have an excuse to change the character of the government and the character of life in the United States. This goes back, actually, to the turn of the last century. You may be familiar, we came across the testimony of Norman Dodd, who was the chief investigator of the tax-exempt foundations shortly after the end of World War II. And his testimony was absolutely stunning, because he interviewed the heads of some of the largest tax-exempt foundations of the country at that time. And we're talking about the Carnegie Endowment Fund for International Peace. We're talking about the Ford Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundations and so forth, the big giants. And his testimony was startling, because he found out that these foundations were deliberately spending huge amounts of money to create crises, to create conditions of chaos inside the United States as a stimulus to the American mind, so that they would be willing to accept drastic changes in the way we live. Their goal, as expressed by, I think his name was Norman Gaither at the time, one of the big foundation heads, he said, Mr. Dodd, he said, well, our instructions are, our motive, our goal is to change life inside the United States so that it could be comfortably merged with the Soviet Union. Now, this was his exact words, and Dodd said that he almost fell off his chair when he heard that. He said, how in the heck can anybody in their right mind expect to change life in the United States so that it could be merged with the Soviet Union, and by inference with all of the other nations of the world, especially of them, many of them being dictatorial in nature? That means that the United States would have to give up its cherished freedoms, its judicial system, its way of life, its everything that we cherish, freedom of speech, our rights, and so forth. And the answer came was that they'll be glad to do that if it's seen by them as a means of protecting them against a dreaded enemy of some kind. And so the Carnegie Endowment Fund and all these other groups decided that they would do everything they could to manipulate the United States into war, and to keep us in war for as long as possible, because under conditions of warfare with a dreaded enemy always portrayed to us, we are in fact willing to give up all of those cherished things. Well, that was back in the 1940s that he discovered all of this. And now here it is 2011, and all of the things that Norman Dodd said, that'll never happen. They could never bring about those changes. It's already happened. What's the difference between life in the United States today, at a deep level, and all of the totalitarian systems of the world? There's so little difference anymore, and those differences are being whittled away as we speak. So it's actually come to pass, and as you say, it's problem and it's solution. You know, it's we create a problem, then we offer a solution, and then we move, and that creates a problem in itself, and we have another solution, and each little step along the way moves us closer and closer to the ultimate goal. Well, the ultimate goal, as I've said before, is to change life inside the United States so it can be comfortably merged with all of the nations of the world, regardless of their sociological, economic, or political characteristics, to bring about this new world order, as they like to describe it. This is the goal, and it's the kind of a new world order that I'm sure most Americans would not like if they fully could understand it and perceive what it is. So, yeah, it's a definite strategy. It's a tactic. It's not just happening by blind, random forces of history at all. It's been planned, and it's being executed in exactly that fashion.
It certainly is, and we've got to counter them. I mean, never before has it been more obvious how criminal these elites are, and that they're gaining monopoly control through government, and then they fund the opposition to call for more government, which is like throwing, you know, the rabbit into the briar patch. Oh, please don't throw me in there. Looking forward into the future, I see a lot of hope, because people really are waking up quick, those that can be reached. I mean, I really see kind of a dichotomy or a paradox where either people are getting more, you know, into the trance and deeply asleep, or they're getting more awake. So I see a clash coming.
Well, you certainly are correct on that. Excuse me for my phone ringing. I keep putting it on hold, but it doesn't seem to stick.
Hey, it's anyway. Real. It's real, G. Everybody, we love it.
It's very real. My phone rings all the time here. I wish I could just unplug it. But anyway, where were we?
I was getting into the fact that there's a clash of...
Clash, of course, yeah. I think what we see is on the encouraging side, we see a rising tide of public awareness. And that's very encouraging. But we also see on the other side a rising tide of totalitarianism. And these forces are rising at the same time. And it's sort of nip and tuck to see which one is going to overpower the other. I believe that the answer to that question will definitely be known within our lifetime, certainly your lifetime, probably mine. In other words, it's not too far away. It's coming to a head.
G. Edward, continuing along that line, the authoritarians, the collectivists, do know we're waking up to them. They admit that in their own Cass Sunstein White House memos. They're scared. They're concerned. And I think that's the most important message here, is that they're not all powerful. They can be beaten. They try to teach us that resistance is futile, like the corporate Borg in Star Trek. But every man, woman, and child, every religion, every race, every group out there needs to realize that every little thing they do towards liberty and freedom and waking others up and resisting adds together to defeat the collectivist. So it's like our free will, by doing little actions, adds to a liberty collective and an individual collective that they can't track or control, that isn't cookie cutter, that is going to defeat their Borg system.
Well, I agree with that. And also there's another element, Alex, and you've heard me talk about it a lot, and that is that knowledge by itself, and even sheer numbers by themselves, as important as they are not as important as what you do with that knowledge and what positions those numbers hold, the people that represent those numbers. What positions do they hold in society? In other words, do they have power? Are they running things? Do they have? Are they leaders? Do people follow them and listen to them? Or are they just sort of rank and file? And so one of my big themes with the organization that we founded, called Freedom Force International, is to motivate people to network together so that they can help each other come into positions of leadership and influence in society. We call it coming to power. Coming to power is more important, well, certainly more important than just knowing what's going on. I mean, you can watch what's going on and complain, wring your hands and say, oh my goodness, this is terrible. I wonder how it's going to turn out.
Well, that's what the CFR is all about. As you know, British Intel set it up to take over the U.S. again in 1922, is they go out and recruit already prominent people and offer them more power to be part of this structure where they admit they're trying to create this continuity of agenda. And there's this idea that the establishment puts out that freedom fighters are supposed to live in a ditch, talk to people over a tin can, and have no power. No, it's the opposite. We have to build media organizations. We have to give to Ron Paul. We have to give to Freedom Force. We have to give our time, our energy, spreading the word. Off with the one, the only, Max Keiser. Now, we've talked about a lot of issues with Max in the past, the gulag economy, the fact that banks were going to start charging you to keep money, and in this cashless society that they would basically force people onto a digital plantation where you're actually charged for the right to engage in commerce, kind of a global private tax to the bankers. It's all happening. The Euro dictatorship trying to swallow what's left of their sovereignty. It's self-run by private banks, admitting it's undemocratic. John Major coming out, who was the architect of the major treaty getting England into the euro, saying it's a terrible thing. We're going to talk about Occupy Wall Street, all these new bank fees. It is all coming up. Democrats throwing Obama under the bus. And Max is also doing big things over in Europe with the first of its kind economic conference. It's all coming up in this in-depth interview with Max Keiser. Max, great to have you here with us.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Alex Jones.
A few weeks ago, a trader came out, a stock trader, on BBC, and it made huge news. And he was an independent trader, and he said that Goldman Sachs rules the world, and there's a global occupation of bankers. It basically sounded like a replay of Max Keiser or Alex Jones, and everybody freaked out, and dozens of publications, Washington Post, you name it, BBC, you had to come out and say, yes, this is really a real person, this was a real interview. Now stating the obvious, they have to ask, is the guy a real traitor? Why did that get everybody so freaked out? But then when you talk about it on big international television or even on BBC with your own show, it doesn't get as much attention.
Well, the big interesting part of the Rustani interview that you're referring to, what made it really interesting and newsworthy was the reaction of the BBC presenters who have been cuckolded by the banking industry and lied to for years and years that they are doing the right thing and the good thing. And so they were like a spouse who suddenly finds out that their wife or husband is cheating on them. These BBC presenters were told in public that the banks are actually trying to screw them and that they're all crooked. And so they had this reaction, this overreaction, this melodramatic reaction on TV.
Oh, ridiculous. Who could say that? Oh, whoever heard of that? He says fish swim in the sea. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
So that's what made it a classic TV moment. And I think that's just part of the overall global insurrection against banking occupation, as I call it. It's peeking its way into the mainstream media. It's poking through the wall and these...
It's seeping into the matrix.
Yep, the shafts of light of what's really going on are now beaming into the very controlled media situation. So this is a part of that, and it's growing. I'm just reading a tweet right now from Lucy Kavanaugh, who's with Russia Today, and she is saying that there's a crowd outside of Jamie Dimon's house on the Upper East Side of New York City chanting USA, USA. So as you know, Alex, we've been talking about the fact that the real people behind the banking terrorist network are principally Lloyd Blankfein and Jamie Dimon. We've been telling people that they need to focus their attention on these two characters. Now, Jamie Dimon is suddenly being called out for the financial terrorist that he is. The facade has been torn away, and people now understand that if you really are for USA, USA, that you would want this terrorist at Guantanamo Bay or waterboarded or something like that, because he is destroying your economy more than anyone else in the world today. So finally, people understand who the villain is in this story. And this is growing, and your show has, of course, been a big part of that. And I think your call to go after the Fed is also very important, because Jamie Dimon is on the board of directors of the New York Fed, as well as being the CEO of J.P. Morgan. And the Fed is really the sub-level, which is the level that needs to be attacked. And I know you were down in Texas, and I saw the video down there in Texas, and it makes perfect sense. And I hope people like Naomi Klein, who is now resurfacing again, she was a big name during the anti-globalization movement of the late 90s, and she's kind of taking ownership of the Occupy Wall Street demonstrations and protests. I hope that she understands and begins to talk about the Federal Reserve Bank and what they do and their role in this occupation in our own country by these foreign-owned terrorists, the bankers.
Well, Max, let me raise that to you specifically, because 2-3 weeks ago, I reached out to Occupy Wall Street. I sent reporters all over the country. They really were grassroots. Now in San Antonio, in Dallas, in New York, in D.C., the people that have gotten control of it are Democratic Party operatives in many cases. And they say no Ron Paul signs, no protest the Fed. The Fed is federal. And then they say to us, how dare you not go after Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, Wells Fargo. And I'm like, those are the big mega banks that own the shares of the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is how they get their government power. It's how they get their trillions in bailouts. So I'm saying take out their power, take out their fortress, then we can get the little buggers inside. And just like the mainline Tea Party got co-opted by Republicans, now they don't want to go after the Fed when it all started with Ron Paul 4 years ago. Now they want to be led by Herman Cain, the former head of the Fed in Kansas City. And it's the same thing with the Democrats now and the Fed coming out and endorsing Occupy Wall Street in a hope of blaming mainline Main Street and the tens of thousands of legitimate companies on Wall Street. Instead, now it's this class warfare thing, exactly what mainline Democrats want. And it makes me very, very sad because I wanted to embrace Occupy Wall Street. And I know it's a diverse group, but the people that the mainstream media gives attention are people like Michael Moore, you know, saying, let's get rid of capitalism. That's the problem. No, the problem is monopoly capitalist that you talk so much about, these monopoly men. So what's your message to them? Am I right in what I'm saying, or am I wrong? Should I embrace Karl Marx right now on air?
Well, as you can imagine, I'm in pretty close contact with the organizers of Occupy Wall Street, principally David DeGraw, who's one of the two or three top people who brought the whole thing to life. And I, you know, he and I have been talking about this lack of a specific demands for the groups. And my issue, the risk that I put forward, is that as the movement gets bigger and bigger and bigger without a specific goal, it's ripe to be co-opted. And I saw evidence of this just a few days ago when Unilever, which owns Ben and Jerry's ice cream, came out in favor of Occupy Wall Street. So that's a very bad development when a foreign corporation, in this case a Dutch company, Unilever, and they have their fake, organically driven Ben and Jerry's ice cream front, come out and start to co-opt this movement for corporate sales purposes, you know you're on a slippery slope down to irrelevance. And this is the problem is not having a specific goal. If Occupy Wall Street said our specific goal is to demand that Jamie Dimon steps down as CEO of JP Morgan and from the New York Federal Reserve Bank chair position.
Or demand a return of Glass-Steagall, or that the trillions of stolen bailout be clawed back, or...
Right, but I mean, those demands require a bit more process and time, whereas a regime change, like Hosni Mubarak in Egypt, I mean, once he got the message, he had to step down. So Jamie Dimon...
Yeah, so we put out a simpler demand to show the power of the movement that makes sense. Hey, step down Jamie Dimon, and by the way, we want criminal investigations.
Right. Now, people will say, well, you know, if you take one Jamie Dimon away, 10 more like him will take his place. That's true. But you did demonstrate that the power of the group to affect the regime change, and if they put up somebody else who's like Jamie Dimon, he's a financial terrorist, then he's going to have to step down too. So the regime change is a very specific goal. If you did this, then Unilever and Ben and Jerry's would not want to attach themselves to your movement because suddenly it's got a specific goal and they themselves rely on Jamie Dimon for financing and JP Morgan for financing. So by law, their fiduciary responsibility would preclude them from being anywhere near the Occupy Wall Street demands. So this is why having a specific goal is paramount to a galvanizing an action that will allow this movement to have some success. Otherwise, it's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger until it's co-opted by corporate America, and you'll start to see commercials on TV with Ben and Jerry down at Occupy Wall Street eating some new flavor of ice cream like, you know, Cream Pie or something like that. Yeah, and it'll become just another part of that American fudge that just kind of permeates everything that we do, where everything is great, don't worry, Disney is here to rescue you, and it just goes down the drain.
I tried to reach out to these groups, and the so-called leaders of it, they claim there's no leaders, but you know, there really are Democratic Party operatives, Move On, they're all involved, and it's just the left wing of this same military-industrial banking complex. I mean, look at Obama, the wars, the torture, the extrajudicial killings, and now quoting Bush statements by his evil lawyers, you know, as the excuse for him to act as an imperial legate.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Well, she's on the show. The one, the only, Roseanne Barr. She's an American actress, comedian, writer, television producer, and director. She worked doing stand-up comedy until 85 appearance on The Tonight Show, brought her to the limelight. She is most famously known for her role in the ABC hit sitcom Roseanne, which ran for 9 seasons from 88 to 97. Barr won an Emmy and a Golden Globe, a Kids' Choice Award, and 3 American Comedy Awards for her part in the show. And on January 4, 2011, she released her third book titled Roseannarchy, Dispatches from the Nut Farm. And so she's gotten a lot of national attention in the last week. And there she is on the book cover for PrisonPlanet.tv viewers, dressed up, I guess, like Che Guevara with an AK-47 with bombs dropping behind her.
No, it's not Che Guevara.
Who is it?
It's all of them. It's every despot in the world, including Rush Limbaugh. That's what the cigar is for.
Ah. Okay, yeah. So you're not saying communism's good?
No, I'm for the creation of an entirely new economic system.
Well, Roseanne, you have got the floor then. Tell us what system you'd like to establish.
Well, one that works. I'd like to establish a system that actually is based on solutions to actual problems that exist in the world, rather than the exploitation of those problems for the enrichment of a few.
Okay, tell us, then, you've got the floor. Tell us what the problems are and then what some basic solutions are.
Oh, boy. Well, you know, the problems are that we don't think, we're not thinking outside of the box, basically, and we need to get out of our mind control program and come up with solutions to problems that exist in the world. Number one, hunger. We have to come up with a way to get the food to the hungry. And if you saw, you know, which is like something that I think about a lot, and, you know, a lot of people smarter than me think about too. And a lot of people smarter and dumber than me don't think about that ever. And, you know, so I just think it's something that we should call attention to. Actual problems of actual human beings instead of systems that don't work and obsolete ways of thinking about things.
Why did you agree to come on this show? Max Kaiser sent us an email over, and then when we were contacted, and I was flattered. Why did you agree to come on this show? I mean, I would imagine you're getting asked on thousands of programs.
I've just listened to you a lot, and I think we have a lot that we agree on, and there's a lot that we don't agree on also. But I really think that Americans and people in the world should start concentrating on things that they do agree with each other on so that we can arrive at solutions a lot faster.
Well, I think,
so, you know, I mean, we don't agree on a lot of things, obviously, but we do on others. So why not?
Sure. Okay. Well, then, just so my audience can really, because that was my idea today. I wanted to get you on and not just yell at you or disagree. I wanted to say, were you serious about this quote or what's your true view? I mean, the real Roseanne Barr. But before we do that, because we're going to come to break and come back, and some stations join us then. What are some of the things you disagree with me on? Because I'm curious.
I don't know. Why don't you ask me some questions?
Okay, the Second Amendment.
Better.
The Second Amendment.
Well, you know, we probably agree there. I agree on all of the things that already exist, and I think that the only thing we don't agree on are economics. Isn't that true?
Sure. I mean, if you believe in the right to keep and bear arms and defend yourself.
I have guns. Hell yeah, I have guns, rifles. Hell yes, I do believe. Absolutely believe
okay,
that.
Okay, well, when a woman starts saying hell yes about guns, I'm starting to find you really attractive right now.
I'm a hell of a shot, I'll tell you that. I've always had a gun. I've always had a rifle because I'm a farmer. You know, besides, you know, I mean, I've always been attracted and loved farming since I got enough money to afford a farm, which was when I did the Roseanne show. I've always had
Roseanne, we got to go to break. Long segment coming up. Wow, this is dynamite. Roseanne Barr is on with us, and I learned she's a listener. And Jaron, by the way, is a big fan out there. He's out there bowing down right now, saying he's not worthy. We'll be right back after this quick break with Roseanne Barr. I'm Alex Jones with InfoWars.com. Stay with us.
Ain't
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Well, not one to shrink away from controversy, Roseanne Barr, who needs no introduction, on Max Kaiser's TV show over the weekend, said, hey, re-education camps for the bankers, if they won't pay more money in taxes, if they make over $100 million a year, or off with their heads. And so when we found out she was a listener, and we were excited to get her on, and I was talking to her during the break. She says she even posts our videos and things on her own blog when she agrees with us. So we're going to explore all of that today and find out, is she serious about the things she said, and let her basically elaborate on it. So, Roseanne, one of the biggest stories in the country was your statements. Would you like to expand on those or clarify them?
Well, you know, it's I gave a speech on Mother's Day last year in front of the White House where I, announced my candidacy for President of the United States of America as well as Prime Minister of Israel. It's a twofer. And it was based on declaring patriarchal politics obsolete, and I called for the dawn of divine matriarchy to descend to the planet. So that's kind of the context in which I spoke all of those things. But, you know, it's like I said last segment, Alex, I'm for a completely new way of looking at things that is congruent with a whole new century. So I just want to leave everything behind that doesn't work, which is basically everything, and start something new that actually does work and actually has, you know, a time limit to when problems can be solved. Like, so I said that within the first year of my presidency that I would legalize marijuana and end all wars, make war illegal, forgive all American debt and student loans. And, you know, I made some big statements, but if I am elected president of these United States, I will guarantee those things within the first 100 days of my presidency.
What about your statement specifically? I mean, we could play them again, but elaborate on re-education camps, chopping off.
Well, I was talking about the people, you know, the people, the taxpayers of this country as well, you know, as the citizens of this country, have a right to seek justice for what's been done to them. And people everywhere in every government, all citizenry, demand justice and a system of just laws that they can actually exist under. Am I right?
Yes.
So I was saying that, you know, when an entire country has been fleeced and robbed, there needs to be a different set of there needs to be a different kind of justice that doesn't allow for that and that actually punishes the guilty. So my statement was, you know, to explore what is the definition of guilty, and it means being tried in a court not heavily weighted in your favor as now. Like, none of these bankers are being arrested, and if beside Martha Stewart, who's the only person who's ever been arrested for any kind of like insider trading, but you know, once they're arrested, they would actually be tried in a court of law that they have not bought and paid for. So that's kind of what I'm, you know, pointing out, the way things actually work in our country. So, I'm trying to speak about a new definition of guilty, and it's like the worst of the worst of the worst of the guilty, you know, need to pay a price for what they've done.
And specifically, were you serious about people that make a cap of $100 million a year? And
no, total wealth, $100 million. There's absolutely, in my opinion, there's absolutely no reason for anybody to be a bigger pig than to own $100 million. It's just a pig culture that allows people to starve in the streets and other people have $100 million. I believe in normalization of economics, absolutely.
What about people like Michael Moore, who I've read is worth around $200 million, constantly lecturing people that capitalism itself is bad? I mean, what do you think of Michael Moore, A, and his statement that capitalism is the problem?
Well, he's a very dear friend of mine, and, in many ways, I agree with a lot of what he says. like you, Alex, and in a lot of other ways, I don't agree with many of the things that he says, because I'm not just about dogma. I'm for human beings being able to speak to each other, particularly when they don't agree, and come to a solution somewhere in the middle. But yes, I would take his wealth if it's over $100 million. Although I would be more forgiving towards Michael, because I know how many people and how many organizations he does support. So, I would make some allowances. I mean, it isn't just, you know, I wouldn't be, like Stalin or anything.
Well, there's always people that make...
I wouldn't take all of Oprah's either, because she does good things. Like, you know, if people were doing good things with over $100 million, besides figuring out, sitting in little cubicles and figuring out how to move numbers so that they can steal more money, I would be more forgiving towards them.
My issue is Michael Moore is calling for a middle-class tax increase. Then that money is stolen and paid to bankers and banker bailouts. So when I talk to the classical mainline left out there, I try to explain to them that big socialist systems actually get financed by the offshore banks, because they can then take control of the government and steal that wealth.
I absolutely agree with you on that. And like I say, and people should know, I consider myself left of some and not left of others. So I'm more of a person in the middle. Whatever works.
Now, what was this point about re-education camps?
That's for bankers. That's for the guilty, because I wouldn't want to immediately behead the guilty who've stolen the entire wealth of communities and created poverty and terror within every community on earth that they've gone to, and devalued the currency, and then brought about food shortages shortly after. Because I'm a compassionate human, I would allow them to actually go and be re-educated. It wouldn't be straight to the guillotine. It would be to the guillotine when they are found guilty and do nothing about it and try to continue. Then they would be beheaded. So I think that, I have it laid out to be as fair as anybody's ever been.
All right. So you're definitely not an anti-death penalty person.
No, I love the death penalty, and I just wish that we would use it against the guilty rather than the innocent. It seems like we rush to kill a lot of people who are, not proven. Like Troy Davis. I mean, a lot of people wonder if the guy was innocent or not in a flawed system, but yet Casey Anthony walks free. So I just think that we need to rethink everything so that it makes sense, and that it's one rule of law that applies to everyone, whether they're rich or a priest.
Okay, let's take your book cover for a moment. You are dressed up. It looks like Che Guevara with a cigar, and earlier you said, no, the cigar symbolizes...
Go ahead, Alex.
No. Tell us what your book cover means.
Well, I guess that it might, my meaning there might have been lost, but it is about all despots. You'll see, there's the Mao in there with the red star and the whole, it's about all male despots that I'm kind of taking over for. Getting rid of them, bringing me on. A Rose Anarchy, if you read the book, is full of solutions to, everyday problems that people face in a comical way.
I never get why, because I see this on the street with some of the anarchists, they dress with communist stars on and call for communism, but call themselves anarchists. And I always wonder why that's the most popular combination. I would think communism is pretty much the opposite. I know they say in the end game of communism, the state withers away, but that never seems to happen.
That's true. But in Rose Anarchy, it would definitely not need to wither away, because the state would not even exist.
Roseanne Barr is our guest.
I think mothers and grandmothers, Alex, they know how to run neighborhoods, and that's what Rose Anarchy is about. It's about female intelligence, which is always overlooked, and none of these politicians ever listen to anything that women do. And women are problem solvers, and that's what I'm for, putting women in positions of power where they can actually solve problems rather than exploit them to be able to get at women.
Now, would this be a dictatorship of women?
No, just a dictatorship of me. And I would be, I would call myself the titular head of the grandmother's tribunal that would, bring in a world of solutions from top to bottom.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions.
Now, where would the guillotines be located?
Probably in the public square, right in front of the White House, I think, is, you know, because, I mean, that's the people's, you know, the center of people's politics, so that's probably the best place, and that's a real nice park there.
How many heads do you think would be chopped off?
Not too many. I think that once they knew that there was ultimate justice headed their way, that they would really change their tune. And, you know, I think that people should be forced to share and forced to care. I really do. And
Now, wait a minute, though, because I understand this is feminine, divine goddess stuff that you're offering us.
Yes.
What I'm trying to get at here, though, Roseanne, is Stalin and Mao and all them, they were making people share. But, I mean, how is this going to be different then?
Oh, well, because, it will be smaller groups of people taking care of each other, you know, instead of like one huge monolithic, unbendable bureaucracy that does nothing but rob people.
Sure. Let's shift gears for a moment, if we may, and you can bring up any subject you'd like. This is riveting information. What do you think of Obama and his Wall Street connections? I've never seen stronger ones. You may disagree. And the field of Republican candidates.
I'm thinking of running as a Republican. I'm just telling you that because I think that everything I say isn't that much weirder than the things they say, which was kind of my point. But Obama, I did not vote for Obama, and I knew that Obama got more Wall Street money than anybody ever had gotten before, and that I was really scared because a large percentage of the money he got came from nuclear power, corporations that have to do with that. So I was horrified by that, and but I mean. Well, we have to have somebody as our president. And
what do you think of Jesse Ventura?
Myself, because I think I'm better than all of them.
What do you think about Jesse Ventura, or is he bad
I
too?
I love him. Actually, I really love that guy. Do you like him?
Yeah, he's a good friend of mine, but he has huevos, though, and you're saying this needs to be a woman thing.
No, I will allow males to serve if they have half a brain in their head, and I do think that Jesse Ventura has, you know, more than half of a brain in his head, so I would allow him to actually serve our structure.
Well, that is, thank you.
Because he has a lot of ethics, too. I interviewed him, you know, when I did a radio show also, and, before he got his television show. He's just a great thinker.
He is really a nice guy, and he's more of a libertarian, though. I don't know if he'd like a dictator, but...
Yeah, but I'm a different kind of a dictator than the ones before. I'm a good dictator.
I understand. The first in history.
Yes, absolutely. The first in history.
Okay. Oh, man. Okay. What about Ron Paul? What do you think of Ron Paul?
There's just so many brilliant things that he says and stands for, and I agree with most of it, but I don't, you know, the libertarian thing, I don't know. I don't see any real feminist subtext to any of it, so I'm not.
I just think he's into freedom for everybody.
Huh?
I just think he's into total freedom, period. Just freedom, period.
Yeah, but it's too much freedom for rich people, and I just think, like, you shouldn't have a lot of freedom to rip off. You shouldn't have the right to have the freedom to rip off the wealth of the entire community.
Yeah, but Ron Paul would say they were able to do that because they controlled the government and used that monopoly of force. Now, let's talk about Hank Williams.
I don't disagree. I don't completely disagree with that.
Let's talk about Hank Williams Jr. He the full clip, he said 89% want to fire all of Congress. I don't like any of the Republican candidates. And he went on to compare, he didn't say who was Hitler, but he said Benjamin Netanyahu and Hitler, like Boehner and Obama. Do you think he should have lost his Monday Night Football gig over that?
No. I don't think anybody should, I think we should have freedom of speech. The guy, he made a lot of people mad with that. But, you know, a lot of people need to get mad. A lot of people need to be more offended in this country and wake up. I mean, they've been lulled with their Prozac and their Zoloft into just this complete slack-jawed, drooling, apathy. So anything that wakes people up and, you know, pisses them off for a minute and gets them their brain reengaged, that's a good thing, I think. I don't agree with what he said, but I understand the spirit in which he said it. Because I've been drunk a lot, too, in my life.
I understand. Let's talk about 9/11 truth. You say you've been a listener for a while, and we know governments staged the Gulf of Tonkin to get us into Vietnam, and we know that Hitler blew up the Reichstag to set up a police state and go from an elected leader to a dictator in Germany. So we know governments and corporations stage things to blame it on their enemies throughout history. So I don't think it's crazy to then question the official story of 9/11. It has a lot of holes in it. Roseanne, what did you think the day of 9/11? And since then, what is your view of that tragic event?
Well, you know, I'm for, like, you know, I definitely think we need to keep investigating until everybody's satisfied that they've heard the truth. So, you know, but I agree with a lot of the stuff that truthers, as they're called, say, and I don't agree with a lot of other things that they say.
What do you agree with? I mean, like, Building 7, we have police saying, get Mac, they're going to blow it up, and then there's bomb blast, and it falls at free fall.
Yeah, I know all that. I mean, I read all the stuff about that, too, and a lot of people always send me, you know, a lot of information that I post on my blog, RoseanneWorld.com, about it. So, you know, I don't know, but I think it's definitely worth a huge look. You know what I mean? What do you think?
Oh, I know it was a completely synthetic, manufactured event. Our government just gave al-Qaeda control of Libya and gave them thousands of heat-seeking missiles and are already saying they need to invade Libya from the liberators they put in, and then I've got to let the TSA stick their hands down my pants or grab my wife's breast or molest my children or al-Qaeda's going to shoot a rocket at me. What's your view of the TSA?
Oh, it drives me out of my mind. But, you know, it just drives me out of my mind. But I don't want to go get I don't want to go through and get the radiation because, I mean, I'm an old woman. So, I mean, I've been radiated so many times, mammograms, teeth, I don't need any more radiation. I don't think any more citizens do either. So I always opt out and inspect you by hand. But, you know, I always kind of think that it's kind of cool that I do that so that people can see it happening to me. So I kind of offer myself and just stand there. Because I just want Americans to realize that is happening, that they do grope old women. And, friggin' wake up and look at it.
Well, I know that I won't fly with my family because of it, and now they're trying to set up domestic checkpoints. They grope everybody from the ankles up to the neck to get into an NFL game.
I know,
now.
And then they tell you, too, they go, now I'm going to use the back of my hand to touch your genital area. I won't use my palm. It's just so friggin' ridiculous that I actually I hate to make light of it, but we kind of have to laugh more. Because I think laughing things to scorn is really powerful. So I would just stand there and everybody, hey, look, there's Roseanne from, or else they think Rosie O'Donnell, and she's getting felt up. I mean, I just think that the more visible we can be, the better.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Well, he is the second most listened to radio talk show host in the world. 16 million on terrestrial radio, a couple million more on the internet and XM, Sirius, all those other systems. And I've been reading the trade publications. If he continues to grow within 6 months to a year, he will be undisputed number one radio talk show host in the world, eclipsing the great one in talk radio, Rush Limbaugh. Now, we're joined by, of course, George Norrie. We only got him for about 35 minutes or so because I guess we're keeping him up from his sleep right now, getting ready for his show tonight. I don't know when the guy sleeps. I actually talk to him in the morning sometimes, the afternoon. But George Norrie joins us. And a subject, I don't get into some of the subjects George covers. You know, he took the show 7-8 years ago in a new direction, covering more political stuff and hardcore issues, and we appreciate that. But he does get into some of the metaphysical. But one area I have covered, just because I've talked to family that's experienced it, to Colonel Craig Roberts and others that have experienced it, people who die do go over to the other side. People who are Aboriginal Indians, have never read Western culture or Bible, have the same experience with angels, golden gates. Some people go to hell and come back. But George has gone further with talking to the dead. Coast to Coast AM host George Norrie. New book that's out, available at Amazon.com. And I've actually ordered one and intend to read it because I'm fascinated with the other side. Who isn't? I want to get into the book, but then obviously in the limited time, George, pick your brain about a couple other issues.
Sure thing. We'll do, Alex. How have you been?
Oh, I've been great. And I work late a lot. So sometimes when I'm up doing stuff, I listen to Coast to Coast AM a couple days a week and then don't get any sleep because I get addicted listening.
Well, we get addicted every time you're on the program, too. I can see the skewing in our ratings, Alex, every time you're on Coast to Coast. People just love what you're doing. And I've got to tell you, the alternative world is no longer the alternative world. The things that you do and the things that we've been doing, I think, are becoming regular, important issues worldwide. And everything we've talked about over the years, everything, seems to be coming true. And I find that to be not only startling, but absolutely riveting. And, you know, and listeners are beginning to appreciate that.
I know. I mean, you went out on a limb, I don't know, 8 years ago when you took over Coast to Coast weeknights. A lot of people were, wow, this guy's really getting into 9/11 truth, world government, Federal Reserve. And now, I don't want to say we've become passé because we're always pioneering and more cutting edge. But now you've got Glenn Beck and all of them, you know, becoming incredibly popular, covering a lot of the same subjects.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, I will give you credit where credit is due. You are the one who paved the way for everybody to do this. I mean, you know, when I came in, Coast to Coast was the paranormal show. You know, as a matter of fact, people would say, "Oh, if that's the UFO show." And that is now a small portion of what we do, because this world has changed. You know, for the last 10 years, this world has gone into such a metamorphosis that if we as broadcasters did not keep pace with that, did not change, did not alter the things we did, we would have been gone, and we had to adjust. And I'm just glad that I was able to get convinced by people who called me about you years ago saying, you got to listen to this guy. Because as you know, originally I said, man, what do I want to promote another talk show host guy for?
Yeah.
But then, you know, I said, you know what? He's not just a talk show host guy. He's a truth seeker. And we've got to do that on this planet.
Well, you certainly do it on your show. And, you know, you talk about the paranormal and stuff kind of taking a backseat or being a third of the show now. And I like that direction, but I got to admit, that some of those shows, because I'm always dealing with such, you know, in-your-face things, that's the show where I'm driving home at 1 a.m. where I'm actually looking in the back seat behind me. That's the show when I get into the house, I go ahead and grab some orange juice and fire up the computer and flick on the, you know, the AM radio 590 here locally and listen. So I think it's really a great mix, and you're a master talk show host and just amazing, George. And folks, people know I don't kiss up to people. I mean, George really is a master at what he does. I mean, take Austin, Texas. You've got a 50 share, I saw a month or so ago in the newspaper. And in some areas, you've got a 60 share. I mean, we're talking about, of all radio period, you've got more than half the listeners in this country.
Well, it's growing. It's a phenom. And I think what we've done is we've touched the pulse of Americans. And they are looking for information. They're looking for people to tell them the truth. And that's what we're doing. And as you were talking about the latest book, Talking to the Dead, as I was leaving the studio last night, in the wee hours of the morning, I saw what I thought was a dead person outside of our studio door. I kid you not. Some guy just flat on his face with his coat over his head, in pitch black. He was dead. He looked dead. Security guard came out and kicked him, and the guy started snoring. And he said, oh, my gosh, I better call the cops and get him away. This planet is going through so many weird things right now. I can't keep track of them. Can you?
No, I can't. In fact, I've reached total overload with the amount of craziness that's going on. Tell us about your book.
Well, the book is called Talking to the Dead, and it is a book about the spirit world and what people are trying to do to communicate with the other side. And it is truly one of the most incredible stories I've ever have done. I wrote the book, Alex, with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, who's an expert in the paranormal. And she is a great researcher, and the two of us started investigating the various ways that people are trying to communicate with the other side. And it's really uncanny. Yeah, there are some hucksters out there and some frauds, but there are also some people out there who truly think that they can communicate with those on the other side. Maybe one day you're going to feel a phone call from someone who's passed on. Maybe Abe Lincoln will tell you.
Well, I'm going to say this. Because of the political things I get into, I stay out of this because of how it would be used. But I've had some interesting experiences in my life. I'm going to leave it at that. And there is a lot going on this planet out in space that you know, we haven't figured everything out yet. In fact, I don't think we figured out 1% of what's happening. But what about this? I know there are hucksters out there claiming they communicate with the dead, but there's also people who do believe they are, and it surely may be happening. I know that the near-death experiences, when people actually die, they're experiencing similar things. People I really respect, or they come back with new knowledge. But what about hucksters on the other side? What about what a lot of Christians believe, that these are actually demons masquerading as the dead with this whole necromancy situation?
That's absolutely true. You just never know what's on the other side. You don't know what's coming across these various portals. I don't play with Ouija boards anymore because you never know what you're going to get. And a lot of people who are extremely spiritual and religious think that we're being tricked. You know, this is the work of the devil, and that they will do anything they can to possess people, to take over. I think most of our politicians, other than Ron Paul, I think they're all possessed.
I do too.
It is unbelievable. And, you know, we're just going through right now one of the most incredible times I have ever seen. In my years, I've never seen the world so topsy-turvy. And my theory is that the globalists are doing everything they can to do this as quickly as they can. And the reason why they're under so much stress and pressure to get this done now is because they know we finally know, and that we've had enough. And
yes,
that we're out to push and push and push, and we're not going to stop.
Well, it's like the movie They Live. The sunglasses are now going on. George, I want to come back in the next little segment or two that we have with you. You got to go at 40 after or so, because I know you're busy, and get into Occupy Wall Street, the globalist, what you think from your deep research and all the experts you've talked to, their master plan is. But first, spend a few minutes, because I wanted to get you on because I saw the book had just come out, and you don't like to toot your own horn, but I've read your past books. They're excellent. Give us a snapshot of this new book.
Talking to the Dead is a book that will help people understand what happens to all of us when it's time to chuck out and go to the other side.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of time.
In the beginning, a patriot is a scarce man, hated and feared and scorned. But in time, when his cause succeeds, the timid join him, because then it costs nothing to be a patriot. You could certainly say that about George Norrie. Here's another quote, Thomas Jefferson: enlighten the people generally, and tyranny and oppressions of body and mind will vanish like phantoms at dawn. CoastToCoastAM.com. CoastToCoastAM.com. Is that the best website, George, for people to visit?
Yeah, it sure is. I've asked them to try to get other domains that tie us and link us straight into coast to coast, but you've got to put the TO in the middle of coasttocoastam.com. I've always told people, Alex, make it one of your favorites on your computer so you don't have to type it up all the time. But you know, that's growing too. But yeah, I mean, your websites, Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com, they're huge. I mean, they're absolutely huge. And well, I get calls every other day from people about you. I get emails about you.
Enough about me, George. We got you on here. I wanna talk to you. But speaking of that, I heard you just mentioning that. Obviously, the execs on the big network you're on know that, you know, you're talented, Emmy award-winning news producer from TV, all this stuff. So, but at the same time, all they've got to do is create a simpler domain that'll also point at that one, and I would bet that would probably increase your traffic by 30%. I mean, that's conservative. I heard you just kind of throw that out there, but you guys have got to create a simpler domain.
Absolutely. I think, for example, again, try it out for me. I haven't. If you do George Norrie, Norry, GeorgeNorrie.com, I think it takes you straight to our website as well.
Well, that's good, then. I'm not getting off into radio land. I can learn a lot more from you than you can learn from me, but you obviously already know that. I want to go to a few calls here in the time we have for you. George, is there anything else before I go to calls? Because I know you've got to leave soon that you'd like to add.
Well, I just want everybody to know, Alex, that even though it seems like we are in the middle of all this mess, I am still extremely positive about the long-term future of America and of its people. We're going to go through some incredible times. We may go through some world wars. But I still think, in the end, humanity is going to make it. And one day, this will be a better place for everybody.
Well, no doubt things have to get bad before people start to appreciate true freedom again. Let's talk to Carrie in Georgia. You're on the air with George Norrie, Carrie.
Hey, Alex. Hey, George.
Hey, Carrie.
I wanted to tell you, thank you, George. I've been trying to get through to my dad. He's 68 years old. I've been trying to wake him up. And I tell you, the morning that he called me, he says, "Have you ever listened to this guy, George Norrie?" And I said, I knew that I had gotten through to him. And it was because of your program.
Well, thank you. So many family members, Carrie and Alex, have gotten together now as a group, as a family, the son, the father, and they start listening to Coast, and it's something that allows them to talk and get closer to each other. It's really a great feeling for me to know that this program is touching so many lives, whether it's alternative medicine or conspiracy theories, or you name it, I'm having a time of my life doing it, so thank you, I appreciate it.
Well, George, you know what Superman's uncle tells him, with great power comes great responsibility. I've learned the responsibility of having 3 million listeners a day. What's it like to have 16 million or more? I mean, that is quite a responsibility.
Alex, I'll let you in on a little secret. I broadcast to one person every night, and when you do that, you touch everybody.
You're right.
So I don't think of how many people are listening, because if I did, I'd probably lose it and go crazy. You got to broadcast just to one person, touch that one person, and you'll see the difference.
Imagine how many sports stadiums of 100,000 people is 16 million. I mean, that is incredible. I think about speaking to millions, and it's like, wow. Or making a film that's watched by 30 million people. It's incredible. Did you want to ask any questions, Carrie, before we jump?
Well, I had a couple of interesting things I wanted to ask you about. Mostly how you see Daryl Issa and Chuck Grassley. You'll hear them talking about Eric Holder and the five memos of July 2010, but you never hear anybody mention that the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act had $10 million of funding for Gunrunner and it. And you never hear anybody talk about the Department of Homeland Security.
But see, you just dropped a bombshell. I knew that months ago and had even forgotten to do a piece on it. The American Reinvestment Act had $10 million in it, and it's come out in testimony. The White House was running this. Holder's been caught lying. Now we learn it's cocaine into the U.S. for guns to Sinaloa, the big cartel. George Norrie, that's a great question. What's your view on this Fast and Furious? Is this Obama's Waterloo?
it may be if it continues to grow and fester. Bottom line, Alex, this has been going on for a long, long time. You know, years ago I had Daniel Ellsberg on the program, Pentagon Papers. You know, he was the one who pointed out and showed everybody how Lyndon Johnson lied about everything of the Vietnam War. Governments generally lie to its population. It's a sad fact. I don't know what happens to honest politicians when they get into office, but something happens to them, and they begin to do things that are just unbelievable. And in this particular case, if the media stays on it, Holder will probably get tossed out as the Attorney General, and who knows what it would do for President Obama's administration.
Well, George, I've talked to a lot of high-level people. What happens is, whatever your fancy is, it shows up with a bow on it, and they just compromise these people. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. George has got to go here in just a few minutes. Let's take another call. Tommy in Tennessee, you're on the air with George Norrie.
Hey, George. Hey, Alex. How you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Good, Tommy.
First of all, I'd like to say that the wife and I go into a prayer of agreement every night and every morning for the protection of the crew, you guys, and Ron Paul's family. And also, are you there?
Yes, sir. I appreciate the prayer.
Okay. And also, George, one of my favorite episodes of yours was Patrick Heron on May 4th on the third hour. And this is, we keep hearing about the global government. We keep hearing about the global economy. Well, now Rick Warren is talking about the global religion that is backed by Bill Clinton and Tony Blair. It's called Chrislam. And I was wondering if one of you would do a segment.
Oprah Winfrey. I think she's a nice lady. I think she's deceived. She's funding some new agey church system. The UN says they want a world religion, George.
Well, I have not been a proponent of organized religion, Alex. You know, I'm a believer in God. Trust me there. And I think everybody has that God-given right to practice and worship the way they want. But I've just never been a fan of organized religion. I mean, I've seen what the churches have done. I've seen what they've tried to do for money. It's just something that I feel we don't need as individuals. Pray and practice within yourself. You can reach your God that way, and it's, you know what, less cost effective, believe me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Tommy. Let's do one more, then I'll continue with your calls for George has got to go, though. When do you get shut-eye, George?
Well, I'll take a little nap after this, and then I'll be ready to go again for another 12-hour day on Coast to Coast AM.
Last call for George. Let's talk to Matt in Ohio. Matt, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I think we're really to a tipping point, and to George's point earlier that, you know, people really seem, you know, kind of maybe just depressed or just, I don't know, perhaps impotent. But I think we're right around the corner politically. Once people, because we're reaching a point where the vast majority of people want some of the same changes politically, you know, the vast majority want to end the wars and draw down troops to some level or another, to stop the violence on the border, the southwestern border, you know, end the domination of special interests over the government, enforce criminal laws on government agents.
And as we push back against the elite, they get more and more clownish.
Do you think we're ready to start identifying where we agree and then just throwing our entire weight behind these, at least the areas where we agree, so we can start getting political effectiveness back in the country?
I think that's a good final question for George Norrie. George?
One of my favorite lines from the movie Network from Howard Beale, played by the late Peter Finch, was, just leave us alone. Leave us with our toasters and our radial tires and our televisions. Just leave us alone, please. But then he stopped and said, I'm as mad as hell. I'm not going to take it anymore. And I think that's what's happening to people around this planet. They're as mad as hell. They're not going to take it anymore. And governments worldwide should be very aware of that and start realizing that people come first.